Welcome, Nina, to day three. Remind us what the question was today.
Well, for the sake of our listeners, we should say the assumption is, as a legal matter, the assumption is, okay, we've struck down the mandate. Now, can we uphold the rest of the law or not? And if we can't uphold the whole thing, what parts can we uphold?
The mandate meaning the requirement that nearly everyone have health insurance.
Right.
So what was the headline from the arguments?
The headline is that I would say the conservative members of the court are terribly worried about the insurance companies, and the more liberal members of the court are terribly worried about what they call usurping Congress's power. So we were very few minutes into this argument, and Paul Clement was arguing for the states and saying the whole bill had to fall. And Justice Ginsburg said, look, there's so many things in this act that are unquestionably okay, that are, you know, clearly constitutional, that may have nothing to do with the mandate, nothing to do with the non-discrimination provision against people with previous medical conditions. 2,700 pages of which most may be clearly okay.
For example, raising the age on which kids can stay on their parents' insurance.
Or even other black, you know, stuff involving black lung disease, things that are totally unrelated. She says, so why shouldn't we say it's a choice between a wrecking operation and a salvage operation, and the more conservative choice is a salvage operation where we preserve as much as we can and we leave to Congress to decide what it wants to change, keep, discard, whatever. Now, to that, Lawyer Clement said, look, the whole point of this bill was to get a non-discrimination provision against for people who had a pre-existing condition and to provide lower rates for everybody, and you did that with a mandate. If you don't have that, it's a hollow shell. Strike down the whole thing.
Yesterday, it sounded like Clement had a pretty easy, or easier than the other guys anyway, time arguing against the mandate. Did he seem to have a relatively easy time of it today?
No, he didn't have an easy time. Everybody had a hard time. But I would say that by the end, there looked to be five votes. If the mandate is going to be struck down, it seemed to me that there was a lot of concern on the part of conservatives about upholding the whole bill. I mean, Justice Scalia kept saying, aren't we distorting the congressional process? They'd need 60 votes to change anything. There's a whole bunch of stuff in this bill. They couldn't undo the bill. Shouldn't we just sort of, you know, tear the Band-Aid off? And there was a very interesting analogy made by Paul Clement, the lawyer for the states, who's saying strike the whole thing down. He very, I think, cleverly analogized this situation to what the court did 40 years ago on campaign finance, when it tried to draw a distinction between campaign spending and campaign contributions. And he said, look, you guys spent 40 years struggling with that and trying to make sense of it. You couldn't do it. And finally, a couple of years ago, you had to basically rip the whole Band-Aid off, get rid of the whole thing. And that's what you should do from the start here. Don't make healthcare like campaign financing was for 40 years, a problem that keeps plaguing you.
When he talks about ripping the Band-Aid off in campaign finance, he's talking about the Citizens United decision that opened the floodgates to
Citizens
to
United decision that said people can spend whatever they want, however they want to spend it, and it has led to the creation of these super PACs and unlimited spending by all kinds of interests, corporations, unions, individuals.
Were there other highlights in the Paul Clement portion of the arguments?
Let me look for a second. So at one point, Justice Breyer held up this thick book, which he said, now look, this is the bill. This is actually it. What do you propose that we do other than spend a year figuring out what stands and what falls? Shouldn't Congress do that? And Justice Alito said to Clement, what's your fallback position? If we don't strike down the whole bill, what's your fallback position? And basically, he said, I don't have one. Get rid of the whole bill.
So that was Paul Clement arguing for striking down the whole thing. Who came next?
Next was Deputy Solicitor General Edwin Kneedler, who's a career deputy in the Department of Justice. He's been there for many decades. let's see.
Describe his position.
Well, his position, the government's position is, if you strike down the individual mandate, you have to strike down the provisions that say there can't be discrimination based on pre-existing condition, and the provision that provides, and here's the jingoistic word, community rating. What that really means is there will be groups, the only discrimination will be based on age, and people will be grouped according to age, and there'll be bands of people, and you will look at your, under the community rating system of this bill, you simply go to your local exchange and you see what kinds of insurance is available, bronze, silver, or gold, at this, this, and this price from company X, Y, and Z, and you pick one.
So how did his argument go?
Well, he, it was all fairly, he had a tough time in reverse, because what the conservatives said is, you're distorting the process. You're saying to us that we should send this bill back to Congress. They never would have voted for some of these provisions without something else. And almost everything in here is probably a trade-off for somebody. You know, I think at some point Justice Scalia referred to the Cornhuskers provision as the venality provision of the Constitution, meaning that's my vote. I have to have this for Nebraska or you won't, don't get my vote. And that was, in fact, you know, what the supporters of the bill had to do to get it over the top. It's, they always say, sausage making, and this was the ultimate in sausage making. And the court said, you can't, the conservatives certainly were saying, and even the liberals were saying, how do we get that sausage, put it, keep it in the holder, so to speak? How do we do that? So that was his problem. Let me just look here for a second. So, and as I said, the conservatives were very worried about the insurance companies. Scalia said, you know, if we don't strike down the whole thing, it's going to bankrupt the insurance companies. Justice Kennedy, a pivotal vote, spoke often about his concern about the insurance companies. Over and over again, what was concerning conservatives in particular was the insurance companies.
Before we began this, you mentioned concern on part of conservatives about striking down a monumental act of Congress in its entirety. How did that manifest itself?
Well, you know, every time that court observers underestimate, every time the court observers say, you know, the court would never go that far, it would never strike down the whole bill. Think again. This court is dramatically more conservative than it has been in many, many decades. It is quite prepared, and we've seen this in other cases, of going farther than people expected. And you know, here the lower court struck down the mandate. That's all it struck down. If anything, it looked today as if there are, if there are five votes to strike down the mandate, it looked like there might be five votes to strike down the whole bill.
So there was a third attorney making yet another 30-minute set of arguments. Describe who that was and what his argument was.
Well, somebody had to defend the lower court decision, essentially, to say, if the mandate is struck down, keep everything else in the bill.
Use a tweezer.
And since even the government doesn't make that argument, the court had to appoint somebody to make that argument. And the lawyer is named Bartow Farr, and he did that. And again, he got, I would have to say that it was very clear that there's not a prayer in the world that what the lower court did here is going to be what the Supreme Court did. And that was largely evident by the fact that there were, compared to the other two lawyers, relatively few questions. The court asked some, and Bartow Farr answered them, and it was mildly interesting, but it was clearly just an appendage.
And so yet again, the court has invited an attorney to make an argument that the court appears to have no intention of buying.
Yes. I should say that on this very day, the court, however, issued an opinion in a case. I won't bother
totally
to tell
you. Separate from the health
care. Totally separate from the health care case, in which the government had agreed with the petitioner, who was a criminal defendant, and the government, and the court had appointed a lawyer to make the other argument, and the court sided with the person that they appointed. That they appointed.
Were there other highlights or takeaway ideas?
Let's see if I'm missing anything. The only other thing I would say is that Justice Scalia, at one point, he was beating up counsel, saying, you know, do you know of any other situation in which this court has taken a law, struck down the central purpose of the law, and still left the law intact? And the lawyer for the government struck back and said, yes, I do. I cite to you when the court struck down the sentencing guidelines, the mandatory sentencing guidelines, and said that they went too far, that exceeded judicial discretion and that judges had to be able to have discretion. But you left the guidelines intact as advisory. And if memory serves me right, as I sit here having no chance to look this up, Justice Scalia wrote that opinion.
So he was ready for that question.
Yeah.
Thanks, Nina.
Thank you, Ari.